Welcome to this Frequency Matters podcast. I'm Pat Hindle, and I'm here with my co-host Eric Heim and special guest Ryan Pratt, founder and CEO of Guerrilla RF. Welcome, Ryan.
Thank you. Good to be here.
So there's been a lot of news about Guerrilla RF, and you have a very interesting background and history and recently received a big award for point-to-point products. So I thought it'd be great to cover some of that history of the company and see how you got to where you are today. So I think you founded the company in 2013. You know, how did you decide to launch the company? What was the genesis of it?
Sure. So, you know, I started off my career at RF Micro Devices. You know, my father, Bill Pratt, co-founded that company back in the early 1990s. I started working there straight out of college in 2000. I started off as an IC designer, working on infrastructure products and then Wi-Fi front-end module products. Worked my way up into technical management. Left RFMD in 2008 to start a new design center for Skyworks. Grew that design center, but along the way, both at RFMD and then at Skyworks, we kept noticing that there were customers coming in with opportunities that needed unique or new products that just weren't getting addressed. You know, both of those companies at those times and still predominantly currently are focused on handset customers, mobile phones. That's kind of what pays the bills. That's the large volumes they ship are, you know, handset. And so naturally, if there was a customer that was not a handset customer, it was very hard to get resources, to get a designer, to get applications engineering to support the customer. And so over those years in my career, I just saw this opportunity that, hey, there are a lot of customers. There are hundreds, if not thousands of customers that are not handset customers, that are not super high volume. And there's a need there. There's a need for products, for support that just was not being adequately addressed. And so in 2013, I left Skyworks. And that's when, you know, I decided to try out what became Guerrilla RF. This idea of finding, identifying underserved customers and addressing their needs with really good application support and really good products, high performance products that met their needs much better than really just repurposed handset products.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. I think you kind of touched on this next question, but let's dig in perhaps a bit more specifically. Your first products were a P-hemmed amplifier and then an LNA. So why did you start with those products and what was unique about their performance?
Sure. I started with those products because those were the technologies and products I was just most familiar with. You know, when I started the company, it was just kind of me, myself, and I. You know, I had to do all the IC design. And so as I was just starting the company, coming up with a business plan, at the same time, I was designing some products. And, you know, fortunately for me, I was able to talk with, you know, the folks at Wind Semiconductor. They were extremely friendly. You know, they gave me access to, you know, some of their technologies at the time. You know, I was able to get some very reduced cost CAD tools. And so I was able to start working on these designs and really create them as, you know, what I would think of almost as a minimum viable product. And if you're familiar with the business canvas approach, you know, one of the first things you need to do if you think you're going to start a company is get a minimum viable product and put it in front of potential customers and make sure that it's interesting to them. Make sure that this is a product they eventually or hopefully sooner than later would want to buy. And so with my background, with the resources I had access to on a shoestring budget and the potential customers I had access to, it kind of all came together to do these P-hemmed LNAs. You know, I had designed them before at both RF Micro Devices and at Skyworks. And, you know, it was very different from the things I had worked on in the immediate previous part of my career. So it was good to get back to them. So again, I think it was an area I was good at. It was an area I had access to the technologies and tools, and the initial kind of, you know, beta testing customers had an interest there. So it all kind of came together.
So you started off with the products you were most familiar with on the amplifier side, and then you moved to switches, I think, next. You know, how did you do that product roadmap? Were you just kind of filling out the block diagram, or was there a certain direction you were going in?
Sure. I mean, you know, a lot of it was just getting those first design wins, interacting with customers, getting, you know, those design wins and getting in with customers and just finding out what other blocks did they need. We did a lot of work with driver amplifiers, gain blocks, power amplifiers, really all kinds of RF power amplifiers. We had a couple switches in there. You know, not a full suite, but, you know, the key was getting the feedback from customers of what they were looking for. And again, the other part of it that I think, you know, we were very pragmatic about was, okay, I'm going to pay, you know, however many tens of thousands of dollars to tape out a mass set. And so on this technology, yes, I can do PHEMT LNAs, but what other blocks can I do in the same technology so I can get the maximum bang for the buck? And so, you know, even to this day, when we tape out an engineering mass set, there can be 40, 50, 60 different die on one tape out, representing, you know, anywhere from 5 to 30 different products. So we try to do that to leverage that R&D spend. You know, mass sets aren't cheap, and you want to get as many different products on one tape out as you can. So that way we could, you know, expand our catalog. That was always the goal. We knew that we never wanted to do custom parts for just one or two customers. We wanted to do general purpose products that would meet the needs of many customers at the same time. And so in having this focus on expanding our catalog, that's kind of how we came into these other blocks. It was feedback from customers, as well as just pragmatically looking at, okay, what are we taping out on this month? And how many other blocks or RF amplifiers can we get on there to maximize that investment?
Yeah, interesting. In both 2020 and 2021, you were named to Inc. magazine's list of the 500 fastest growing companies. What were the major drivers to your market expansion during that period?
Sure. You know, design wins, ramp ups. The nice thing about semiconductors is when you get a design win, they can be tough to win, but they can dramatically change, you know, in a positive way, your revenue. And so I think that's a lot of it. A lot of it was, you know, we were just hitting our stride at that point, getting our first large design win shipped and underway. A key part for us also of that earlier growth was the automotive market. When I started the company, automotive was not even vaguely on the radar. We had no idea we were going to do, you know, products for automotive. It wasn't a market that we thought we could hit well. But as it turned out, we did some infrastructure LNAs, and we had an automotive customer come to us and just say, hey, we need an LNA for satellite radio for S-stars. Do you guys have anything? And by the way, here's an aggressive cost target. Can you hit it? And so we looked at it, and it turned out one of our infrastructure amplifiers hit the spec perfectly. It also worked out that we had, you know, a pretty good cost structure on that. And so we were able to win that business. And so we told them, hey, we've never done automotive before, you know, and we were fortunate in that they were very friendly and just said, that's okay. We'll help you. Well, matter of fact, you know, while you qualify your products to the automotive standard, we'll take the initial shipments non-qualified, just standard catalog parts. And so they gave us a year to internally invest and develop and come up with all the resources and steps we needed to take to get our first automotive qual done. And so we did that. And what we realized pretty quickly was this wasn't the only customer making antennas for S-Stars. And so we started talking with other customers, manufacturing satellite radio shark fin antennas, you know, and began to win a lot of business there. And so that's what drove a lot of that early, late 2018 through 2021 growth, was really us just starting to get into that automotive market.
Yeah, I know that automotive qualification is tough. So that's a good job to be able to accomplish that. And so by the end of 2021, you became a publicly traded company in the alternative public offering. You know, what made you decide to go public and how is that different than an IPO?
Sure. You know, the main thing that drove that for us was access to capital. We've always been funded by angel investors. We don't have any institutional investors on our cap table, really, maybe just one. And so we wanted to be able to get access to larger amounts of capital. And we felt that remaining private, our options were extremely limited. And we felt that as a public company, we could get access to, you know, again, just a lot more capital. Gorilla RF has raised, you know, in total somewhere in that $40 to $50 million range. And that's a lot of money, certainly. But if you compare us to most other semiconductor companies, that's, you know, 1/4 to 1/10 of what most other semiconductor companies end up raising by the time they're public and, you know, profitable and things like that. So, you know, for us, again, it was access to capital. And the way we chose to do it was, as you mentioned, an alternative public offering, or the more technical name is it was a reverse triangular merger. And the difference between that and a normal IPO really is scale. To do a full IPO, company really needs to raise somewhere in the order of $40, $50 million or more. And we weren't big enough. We weren't big enough to A, know what to do with that kind of money, and B, we weren't big enough to where the market would be willing to put in that level of money. And so the reverse triangular merger, or APO, is just a way for a company to access public markets, but at a much smaller scale than an IPO would afford.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. So this seems to be a common thread in the answers you've given to us so far, but Gorilla RF seems to target underserved and hopefully lucrative opportunities in the markets you serve. How do you identify those opportunities and then design products that fit into those niches?
Sure. No, that's a good question. I think, you know, for us, obviously, serendipity is part of it. But I think the other big part of it is our very broad general purpose catalog. You know, by having products that can be used by multiple different markets, you know, we have the solutions out there. And in a lot of cases, it's these markets and customers find us. It's our webpage. You know, we've made a lot of investments in the webpage, our search engine, things like that. Obviously, you know, marketing, our sales and marketing team is very active, always looking for new customers, new markets. Our distribution partners help a lot as well, where they're able to identify some of these new markets and customers for us and help us get engaged there. But I think a lot of it is just, you know, customers coming to us. Honestly, one of the biggest ways we've been able to identify these markets is when competitors end of life a product. And so we've had that very lately here, where the RFID market, for example, a competitor end of life some power amplifiers that were used very heavily in the RFID reader market. And so when customers, you know, heard about this and were like, uh-oh, we've got to find an alternative solution, it just happened that we were one of the only companies out there that had an appropriate power amplifier that could replace this end-of-life device. And so over the last year, really 9 months to a year, RFID has just exploded in terms of customer engagement, app support, design wins, things like that. You know, it hasn't really quite led to much revenue yet, but we feel very confident in the next year or two that the revenue will come, you know, from these design wins. So I think, you know, having general purpose catalog parts, I think, is a great way. And again, you know, with the sales and distribution channel, and again, competitors. Our competitors have been our biggest help in many cases, because again, they'll end of life these products, because they are, I'm sure for our competitors, these are low volume products, they're niche products. They're certainly not going to keep their fab full. And so when they very rationally end of life these products, it really creates these discovery opportunities for Gorilla RF.
And so you have filed a lot of patents and received a lot of them. You know, what types of technologies are primarily covered in these type of patents?
Sure. For us, it's, you know, switching and RF amplifier type applications.
Alrighty, switching gears just a little bit. I saw a quote from you, which I love, by the way, where you said, "When I started Gorilla RF, I wanted to build a company that I would have loved to work for earlier in my career. From day one, I wanted work-life balance to be a core feature of working at Gorilla RF. And this is why we have an unlimited PTO plan and why I'm proud that our parking lot is mostly empty by 5:15 every afternoon." As I said, that's a great quote. And but how did you build that kind of welcoming culture over the years?
Sure. You know, it's challenging, because I think there's a perception that, you know, you need to kind of crack the whip, right? You need to demand the most out of your employees. And I think the truth is, especially with engineers, I think there's no one that drives an engineer harder or can drive them harder than themselves. I think, you know, almost all the engineers I know, they want to be successful. They want to develop successful products. They want to see their product incorporated into a finished product. You know, my chips are in the shark fin antennas of almost every car you see. That's cool. I like that. And a lot of engineers are motivated by that. And so what I felt was some of these kind of old school approaches of doing bed checks at the office. Hey, it's 5:01. Is everyone still here? It's 9 a.m. Has everyone showed up yet? To me, those send the message that I don't trust my employees. I'm going to set a fixed number of PTO because I don't trust my employees to get all their work done in an appropriate amount of time. And so, you know, and I get in a big company, you know, you kind of have to set a lot of these policies to lowest common denominator, right? But, you know, Gorilla RF isn't a big company. You know, we're growing, and I think we will be a big company one day, but I never want it to feel that way. I want this to feel like a relaxed place where engineers have a lot of creative freedom and can self-motivate. And, you know, I think for us, we've found that very much to be the case. We have an unlimited PTO policy, but the problem we had was not many people were taking advantage of it. And so we actually then on top of that started doing company shutdowns. So for 20 days a year, the company is closed. Don't come in. Don't send emails. You know, we get a week off for spring break. We get a week and a half off for Christmas and New Year's. We get a week off in the summer over July 4th. So we felt it was important to have this balance of work life, because engineers also sometimes have a tendency to be workaholics, and that can burn people out. And I've just seen so many people in my career who their bosses drove them, they drove themselves just in unhealthy places. And I just think there's no need for it. You know, the other luxury we have, because we're a general purpose product developer, we're not doing custom products. So most of our products don't have really tight fix customer deadlines. And so that allows us to not be as schedule focused. You know, certainly some engineers are perfectionists and they'll work on something forever. And so, you know, there needs to be a balance there of, okay, it's good done. It's good enough. Let's tape it out. Let's see how it works. But again, we've found that with our business model and our size and our agility, we're able to meet customer needs very quickly. That just allows us to offer much better work-life balance. And, you know, I think it is. This place, to me, is a lot of fun to be at, a lot of fun to work at. And I hope that we can keep it that way for everybody here.
Sounds great. I'm going to check out your job openings. So moving to some recent news, although 2023 was kind of a down year, you received a large point-to-point product order at the beginning of this year, and you posted a record revenue in Q4 of last year. So how do you see things shaping up, and you know, what are your primary drivers for growth this year?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny, 2023, it felt like a down year. Certainly we had a lot of issues in 2023 we had to work through, but we ended up, our revenues were up 30% for the full year. As you mentioned, our Q4 was a record. And so we kind of came out of 23 with real good momentum. Also, as you mentioned, in 2024, we've announced some additional very strong revenue growth that we expect to encounter this year. You know, we've got some big design wins kicking in. We got one or two surprise new design wins, like that point to multipoint you mentioned earlier. And so I think it's, for us, it's just more of the same. We tried to raise more money by doing an uplist mid of 23. The markets just weren't there. The markets were not very friendly towards companies raising money, especially unprofitable companies, due to higher interest rates and macroeconomic concerns. So we had to pause that effort and take a real hard look. And we realized that the only other road for us was to get to profitability as soon as possible. And so we had to make some hard cuts to get there. But the other part of it is growing revenue. So you got to cut expenses and grow revenue. And that's what we concentrated really hard on the second half of the year doing. And we've been pretty successful. So we think we're going to get to profitability, or at least break even on an operating basis, very soon here in the next few months, in the next quarter or two. We're on track for that. And that right now, that's the main focus for us, is again, continuing to focus on these growth opportunities and getting the company to break even and then profitability.
Yeah, thanks for that. That's always an exciting step and a necessary step for any company as you grow. And so can I ask you to expand on that a little bit and perhaps to pull out your crystal ball? What are the future plans for the company, and what's your outlook on the industry in the next few years?
Sure. I think, you know, the future plans for Gorilla RF are just keep growing as fast as we can grow, but now shifting to doing so profitably. We need to get over that final hurdle, get to break even profitability. Once we get there, we're not done. And we're going to continue investing in growth and new product development. And so, I think for us, it's all about growth. Thinking about the industry, I'm obviously very bullish in the wireless industry. RF semiconductors, the need is only going up. A lot of people are now excited about AI and the opportunities that bring, especially right now, it's kind of in compute and things like that. But at the end of the day, AI needs to collect and have access to data. And most of that data is coming in wirelessly. You've got wireless Internet of Things, you've got edge compute resources, just all these different megatrends. They all point towards a much larger, a much healthier wireless industry. And so I'm very excited about it. I know, you know, one of the things I'm excited about in particular is this trend towards space-based 5G telephony. I think that's really cool. I think it's neat. You know, with the new Apple iPhone, you can get emergency contact via satellites just from your standard iPhone. What is it, 15 or 16? But I think that's going to be coming for more phones. I think there are multiple companies building out satellite constellations that will enable this. And I think it, in many ways, it's a game changer. Being able to be connected from any place on the face of the earth, you know, I think just there's so many applications that can take advantage of that. Container tracking, obviously, user communications, safety systems. There's just so much there that I think that could enable. In addition, there's still a lot of rural areas that do not have access to internet. And so imagine, you know, being able to have 5G connectivity in the most rural or remote area and not needing to build ugly cell towers everywhere, which of course I would love, but hey, it's not going to happen, right? You can't have this infrastructure built out every single place. So I think there's a lot of exciting megatrends driving the industry. And again, I'm very bullish and very excited by all these new technologies and applications that are coming out.
Yeah, I think I would echo your sentiment as well, Ryan. Despite some choppy, turbulent, short-term economic headwinds, I guess there are some really interesting developments going on in the industry. And so we'd like to thank you, Ryan, for talking with us today about Gorilla RF's interesting history. That's been great. It's very illuminating. And keep up the good work. And we'll see you at IMS in June. And to our audience, you can find more podcasts at podcast.microwavejournal.com. And thanks for listening.